Places Unknown by Dead Cake, a Stargate Atlantis fic with the relationship between Jennifer Keller, Rodney McKay and John Shepherd, rating teen and up. Additional tags include alternate universe, no Stargate, established relationship, polyamory, queer platonic relationships, asexual character, don't ask, don't tell, long distance relationship, canonical character death, minor ones, hurt, comfort. Written for the Polyship Week 2023 collection. There's really no easy way to say this, Rodney says on their very first date. Well, no, it's actually very easy to say. I just have no idea how you're going to respond. You haven't actually said anything yet, Jennifer says, taking a sip of her beer. The bar is loud around them, and it's late enough that some of the tables have been pushed aside for dancing, which was the whole point of choosing this bar in the first place. So, maybe say it, and then we can worry about my response. Rodney looks up from where he's tearing up a straw wrapper on the table. I have a boyfriend, he says, his chin tipping up, and Jennifer feels a bit like she's been punched. There's a lot packed into those four words, and her mind reels a bit, sorting through it. You could have told me that before, she says, because, when it comes down to it, what matters is that he's led her on. They've been talking for weeks already. He's had every opportunity to tell her. No, Rodney says, his fingers already making a mess of his napkin. It's not really something that just comes up in conversation, but I wanted you to know. I like you. And he already knows. He's fine with it. I mean, if you are. Jennifer doesn't know what to make of that, because Rodney looks earnest and hopeful, and not at all like a creep trying to sleep around. Let me think about it, she says. Maybe because Rodney's shoulders slump a little, and maybe because she's had a few too many beers already, she adds, I can think and dance at the same time. Rodney's boyfriend is John, it turns out, whom he talks about all the time. Jennifer should have put those pieces together before Rodney told her. Rodney reassures her that John is in the Air Force and their relationship is supposed to be a secret. There may also be a comment or two about Rodney's unparalleled genius and how it would make even his closest competitors trip up, but Jennifer can ignore all of that. John is currently deployed somewhere top secret that's probably Afghanistan, according to Rodney. They're used to it, or so Rodney claims, even if his smile turns a little strained and his complaints become more pointed whenever it comes up. Jennifer feels almost sorry for John, because as much as Rodney talks about him all the time, Jennifer can't help but think he's moving on. She and Rodney have dinner as often as possible, and talk on the phone when they can't. And Jennifer's not quite sure how John would even fit into this life if he were around. At least, she's not until she steps into Rodney's apartment for the first time, or rather, it seems quite clear, John's apartment. I didn't realise you lived together, she says, running her fingers over a model plane on a shelf next to the television. Rodney shrugs. With grad school and ROTC, neither of us had much time or money. It made sense. That had been years ago, more than a decade. Jennifer feels winded, blindsided by the depth of the relationship she's stepped into. Are you sure this is okay with him? Jennifer asks later, lying with Rodney in sheets she's sure John bought. Rodney fumbles around in the dark for a moment before dropping his laptop between them on the bed. You should talk to him sometime, he says, sitting up and opening the laptop, any post-coital glow disappearing in an instant. I'll message him. Jennifer pulls the blankets around her and settles into the fact that John's never really been gone at all. Jennifer has an unsent draft in her email, not entirely sure what she's supposed to say to her boyfriend's boyfriend, who's deployed in places unknown. In the end, John emails her first. It's brief, to the point, not at all like her awkward and rambling introductory draft. Just a short, "How's work with the good Dr. Beckett?" Jennifer's used to hearing all about John from Rodney, but for some reason she'd never really considered Rodney would tell John anything about her. After Jennifer gets over her initial nerves and sends out her response, "Carson's a decent boss, but have you met him?" conversation flows easily between them. A few messages here and there, even the odd conversation on the phone when Rodney has to step out for a moment. It's easier than Jennifer could have anticipated. In her conversations with John, Jennifer learned three things very early. 1. John is very close with someone named Holland, not weirdly obsessed with Holland the place, as Jennifer had first assumed. 2. John is definitely not responsible for the high thread count sheets, but he is to blame for the sparkly curtains. And 3. John is just as big a nerd as Rodney is when it comes down to it. While John's nerd factor certainly begins with superheroes and sci-fi, Jennifer is delighted to find that it extends to cheesy B-movies, her favourite. Rodney refuses to give Jennifer the remote for a week after that discovery, a punishment he swears John also endures on a regular basis. "It's not fair," Rodney complains into the phone, pulling Jennifer right out of her nap. "She kissed me. What was I supposed to do? Not give her the remote?" Jennifer can barely hear John's wry response over the line, but she sees the smile pulling at Rodney's frown. "I'll play fair next time," Jennifer says, and they're both grinning at the sound of John's laugh over the phone. "The last time John was home was for a funeral," Rodney says, picking up the conversation in the middle like they've been talking for hours, even though Jennifer just sat down at the table. "When was that?" Jennifer asks. She's learning to roll with the punches. Pushing Rodney to follow any normal conventions only gets them so far. Rodney shrugs, his two fingers tapping against his thumb in a silent count. 2 months ago," he says, but he doesn't sound certain. "It was 2 funerals, actually. 2 guys from his unit went down in the same helicopter." Jennifer's a doctor, but she never knows how to respond to things like this. Death is there, part of her daily life, but it's still an unknown. "Did you know them?" she asks, fumbling with the breadsticks. "The restaurant is nice, not too upscale, but fancy enough." Smiling, his eyes distant, Rodney nods. "Oh yeah," he says, his hands already moving. "Mitch and Dex, they've been friends with John forever, or they had been." He's off then, rambling through tangent after tangent, reminiscing about people Jennifer has never met. It's reassuring to hear him talk so fondly of these men Jennifer doesn't know. He cares deeply for the people in his life, and Jennifer is grateful to be included. Rodney rummages through the cabinet next to the television but comes up empty-handed. "Must be in John's room," he says, stalking over to the guest room, which apparently isn't a guest room at all. "Give me a minute." He comes back with the DVD, but Jennifer can't focus on watching. "I thought you and John shared a room," she says, 10 minutes into the movie. Rodney shrugs, his arm loose around her shoulders. "Sometimes." He sighs, kicking his heels up on the coffee table. He's not really one for conventional relationship crap. Jennifer has no idea what that means. Rodney says, "You don't like the term boyfriend." Jennifer sends the message before she can second-guess herself. John's reply comes a day later, a day Jennifer spends biting her nails because she's afraid she's messed something up. "I don't hate it. It's easier than explaining anything else." Jennifer messages back immediately, but doesn't really expect to reply. "You can't say that and then not explain." Is he in some sort of weird sex community? Jennifer asks over dinner, because she's so curious she might explode. Rodney stares at her, his mouth open and gross, before he swallows bemused. John? He asks. No judgment or anything, Jennifer says, although maybe the word weird was a little judgmental. She can't help herself. I'm just trying to figure it out. Rodney's laughing, though, before she's even finished talking. He's definitely weird about sex, but not like that. Jennifer sighs into her soup. Can you tell me anything? She asks, tired of digging. They're supposed to be open about this kind of thing, the three of them. Rodney's fingers dance on the table for a moment, long enough that Jennifer realizes he's nervous. It's cute sometimes how protective Rodney is of his relationship, how protective he is of John. But Jennifer's trying to figure out where she falls in all of this, and that protectiveness can feel like a barrier when she pushes. I'm going to tell you something, Rodney says finally, his fingers fanning out between them. Normally, I don't think it's anyone else's business, but... He glances away, his cheeks flushed. I want this to work, you and me. So maybe you need to know. John and I, we don't have sex. Ever. That's not at all what Jennifer expected. It's not anything Jennifer can fathom either, so she says the first thing that comes to mind. And you're okay with that? Rodney crosses his arms over his chest. Yes, he says, uncharacteristically short about it, leaving no room for questions. Oh, Jennifer says, more unsure of where she stands in this relationship than ever. You and I could try some weird sex stuff, though, Rodney says hastily, looking away again, if you wanted. Rodney's on his computer, refreshing someone's Facebook profile every few minutes. He's been doing that for a few days, and Jennifer still has no idea why. She doesn't even know whose profile it is. Jennifer takes Rodney's coffee cup to the counter and refills it, setting it carefully within reach again. Who is that? She asks, trying not to sound like she's snooping. Rodney doesn't look up, just sips his new coffee and refreshes the page again. John's arsehole brother, Rodney says after a moment, refreshing again. Taking a careful bite of toast, Jennifer says, I didn't know he had a brother. She hadn't known. She hasn't heard from John in a few days herself, maybe a week. It's not uncommon for him to disappear for a few days at a time. She doesn't usually notice, not until Rodney says something. Usually something loaded with prickly relief when John messages again. It's been almost 3 weeks, Rodney says, tapping at the table next to his laptop. The words hit hard. Jennifer sets her toast down. She should have noticed. She should have been paying closer attention. I'm sure he's fine, she says. But she's not. She has no idea. She's been with Rodney for 4 months, and John never been out of contact for more than a handful of days. Rodney sighs, refreshing again. His brother will be contacted if anything... when they find anything out. He hasn't posted anything yet. I think that's a positive thing. I hope it is. Jennifer feels a bit like the room is spinning. She hadn't thought about this either. John means everything to Rodney, and the Air Force has no idea, can't know. He's cut off without John, has no grounds to even ask for any information. Unjust doesn't begin to cover it. Rodney, Jennifer says, already moving to wrap her arms around Rodney, offering any comfort she can. The door opens and Jennifer sits up, expecting Rodney back because he forgot his laptop or his cell phone or his favourite pen. She does not expect to find a strange man standing in the doorway to Rodney's room. The man seems just as shocked to see her, but around his bruised lip and butterfly bandage on his cheek, Jennifer sees it. John, she says, relieved when his shoulders droop, tension leaving him as he leans against the door jamb. "Jennifer," he says, voice just as scratchy and low as it is on the phone. "You're alive," Jennifer says, untangling herself from the blankets, stumbling across the room to John because he's alive, but he looks like he might tip over at any moment. John sighs, flinching only a little when Jennifer reaches up to feel his forehead. "I'm home." It takes Rodney less than an hour to get back to the apartment, sweeping through the door and dropping his bag on the couch in a whirlwind of motion. "Is he really?" Rodney asks, kissing Jennifer on the forehead as he eyes the bedroom warily. "He's there," Jennifer says. "He didn't want me to call you back from work, but he looks like he could use some company." Rodney hesitates, nervous and fidgeting, but there's a smile catching at the corner of his lips. "Sounds like him," he says, kissing Jennifer again before he gathers himself up and marches across the apartment. "Thank you," he says, disappearing into his room. Jennifer goes to work because she doesn't know what else to do. It doesn't feel like a normal day at all, but the world's still spinning. "John's back," Jennifer says to Carson when she finds him still working over his lunch. Carson may be her boss, but he's Rodney's friend first. He'd been the one to get them in contact in the first place. Carson beams at her. "That'll be good for Rodney, then." Jennifer drops into the chair next to him. "I'm glad. He was so worried. I was worried." She pauses, because she hadn't realised quite how worried she was until she said it. Carson places a gentle hand on her shoulder. "Why don't you go home early? I'm sure we can manage without you for a few hours." "Do you think they even want me around?" she asks. The question's been gnawing at her all morning, leaving her feeling sick. Squeezing her shoulder, Carson says, "I think you should ask them." Rodney and John are on the couch when Jennifer opens the door. John tipped against Rodney in the same way Jennifer likes to settle herself. The Princess Bride is playing quietly, but Rodney's got one hand on his computer, the other carding softly through John's hair. "I brought pizza," Jennifer says, setting the box on the coffee table. John startles, grumbling something and shoving his face into Rodney's shoulder. "He's a big baby," Rodney says, closing his laptop and setting it aside. "I'm sure he'll appreciate the pizza once he's slept off some of his meds." Jennifer eyes the pill bottle on the table, wincing as she catches the dosage. "What happened to him?" Rodney shrugs, already digging into the pizza. "He's not saying much," he says carefully, strained in a way Jennifer isn't used to. "But he's here. That's the important thing." Sitting down on Rodney's other side, Jennifer takes a piece of pizza. "I thought you hated this movie," she says, because if nothing else, she can offer a change of subject. "Yeah, well," Rodney says, making room, "it's John's favourite." Jennifer wakes in the dark, curled up with her head in Rodney's lap. Except it's not Rodney. Isn't breathing like Rodney, doesn't smell like Rodney, doesn't even feel like him. She sits up fast, jostling whoever it is on the couch with her. "Shit. That's John. Of course it's John. Ah, fuck." "Sorry," Jennifer says, fumbling to turn on the lamp. John looks worse like this than he had in the morning, and Jennifer can't help but glance at the pill bottle on the table again. "It's okay," John says around a wince. "Seriously, just some bruises. You should have seen me a week ago. The sunburn was grotesque." Jennifer's heart is still racing, but she settles herself back on the couch. "Can I?" she asks, reaching out for the bandage she can see peeking out from under John's shirt. She's a doctor and she's curious, doesn't know the extent of the injuries, doesn't know how well John's been treated, doesn't know how she should treat him, but that's just part of it. John shakes his head, taking her hand before she can touch, but he doesn't push her away.
"Bruise my ribs too,"
he says, waving at his torso with his other hand. "I could get Rodney," Jennifer says, because she doesn't know what else to say.
"Went to the lab," John says, relaxing back against the couch, his head falling back, eyes shut. He hasn't let go of her hand. "He'll be back soon."
"John," Jennifer says. She hasn't called him that to his face before. She's known him for months, but hasn't ever spoken to him like this. It feels odd, and at the same time it feels perfectly normal.
"I could go."
John's grip goes tight around her hand.
"Rodney wouldn't like that."
"Rodney's not hurt and home for the first time in months," Jennifer says. But she settles back on the couch. It doesn't feel like John's about to let her go.
"Stop worrying," John says. "You're just as bad as Rodney."
"I'm a doctor," Jennifer says, pulling the blanket off the back of the couch and draping it over both of them. "I know what I'm doing. That makes me 10 times worse than Rodney."
John smiles, head tipped back against the couch.
He's pretty, even around the bruises. Jennifer licks her lips and looks away.
"I'm glad he's got you," John says. "He's quieter now, maybe drifting off."
"I'm glad you're back," Jennifer says, allowing herself the comfort of leaning closer, her shoulder bumping John's.
There's quiet then, long enough that Jennifer's kicking herself for not turning off the light again, before John says, "They're kicking me out."
Jennifer doesn't breathe for a moment, the words landing foreign, unrecognizable on her ears.
"The Air Force?" she asks, afraid to say it.
John nods a slow up and down where he's resting.
"Haven't told Rodney," he says, and Jennifer feels more like she's intruding than she has the entire time she's been seeing Rodney.
"You don't need to tell me anything," she says, even though all she's wanted for months is to be included.
"I want to, though." He says it softly, but it's clear.
"Holland, he went down behind enemy lines, and I had to try. I went against orders, but I had to try. I couldn't leave him there. Rodney won't understand. He'll hate it. But maybe you..." He trails off, but he's still squeezing Jennifer's fingers like a lifeline.
Jennifer's never been to confession, doesn't know what it's like, but this must be something close. She doesn't know what she's done to earn this trust, but she can't turn it away.
"Did you get to him in time?" she asks.
John shakes his head, just enough that Jennifer can feel it, just enough that she knows.
"But it was worth it," she says, "and it's not a question. Trying to save someone is always worth it."
In the morning, Jennifer takes a longer shower than she needs to. She can hear John and Rodney arguing over the sound of the water, but when Jennifer steps back into the living space, John's sipping tea on the couch, and Rodney's puttering around the kitchen, making breakfast.
"John's going to be around for a while," Rodney says when Jennifer joins him. He's pouting, but maybe not as upset as he's putting on. By the way his hands are flying, the shifting of his gaze, he's nervous more than anything.
"Good thing there's room for 3 of us in this apartment," Jennifer says.
"Because there is. There always has been."
"Yeah?" Rodney asks, hopeful and hesitant, in a way that twists at Jennifer's heart.
"If you want," she says, taking over at the stove where the eggs are starting to burn. "Your boyfriend seems fine with it."
Rodney's smiling now, something big and sweeping, and he kisses her there at the stove. Jennifer doesn't mind that the eggs are burning, that they're going to have to start over, doesn't even need to worry about it, with John pushing past them into the kitchen, complaining about how easy it is to cook eggs. John's ears go pink when Rodney kisses his cheek, and his complaints die off with a roll of his eyes. Jennifer doesn't know what she'll tell anyone or how they'll react,
but whatever this is will be worth it. The end.